"Who's there?" I say nervously. It comes out as a whisper. My vocal cords twinge uncomfortably. I clutch the shimmery blanket up against my body. As the person walks closer, I start to distinguish features, only to recoil slightly in fear. "What are you?" I whisper. "He is enormous. At least 6'10", and not an inch shorter. His shoulders are almost twice as broad as my own, and his whole body is very long and lean. There is not an ounce of fat on his frame. An obscenely tight tan jumpsuit clings to him, and matching boots climb up to mid-calf. I can't see a single seam or button anywhere. I don't recognize the material either. On his left shoulder, something, perhaps a pin, flashes in the light. He has pitch-black hair that is perfectly straight and sweeps over his forehead. His skin is the color of milky coffee, warm and brown. It is immaculate. There isn't one scar, freckle, or wrinkle that I can see. His eyes are also black. So black I can't distinguish between them and his irises. But the most terrifying part is that the whites of his eyes, they aren't white. They're brown. They don't look at all like human eyes. They're like dark orbs peering out at me between heavily shadowed lids. His forehead is flat and his eyebrows are harsh, creating a strong overcast to his already dark and menacing look. He leans toward me, and instinctively I push away from his touch. My back bumps up against the wall behind me. The bed, I realize, is actually a raised platform. I am only a foot or two below his eye level. I clench my hands tightly around the blankets, pulling it up around my chin. He raises a hand to my face, and I cry out in fear. His hand is enormous, like boxers' hands, with thick knuckles and broad palms. The fingers don't taper down on the sides. They are all the same length, except the thumb, which is normal. In response to my cry, the man jumps back and puts his hands behind his back. I see a twitch of some kind of emotion cross his that face. His mouth twists up slightly and his eyes widen just a tad. Then his brow falls down slightly and an almost imperceptible wrinkle appears on his forehead. Did I startle him? Did I offend him? The thought hadn't occurred to me. Yet it must be true. He's probably embarrassed by the way he looks. Maybe he's here to check my vitals or explain what's going on. He is still standing there while I think. He's not moving a muscle. A twinge of sympathy breaks through my fear and my confusion. That's from the opening chapter of Renee by Jessica Ice. And it asks a lot of ifs, a lot of questions, as I'm sure you may be asking from hearing that description of that moment in her life. What happens when human beings from two different times meet each other? Well, in Renee, it turns out to be a not so easy of an encounter for either. Our story finds Renee, our story's protagonist, scooped up by a band of scientists from the future through an experimental time travel program that saves her life. Though Renee is slow to recognize the strange-looking humanoid she first discovers when she awakens as saviors. In part, Renee is a dystopian novel. The future of humankind, some 1,000 years or so distant, is painted mostly as an authoritarian, science-imbued society where emotions are quashed, though empathetically inclined humans are noted and accepted to a point. Hierarchy is the norm, all in what seems to have been a hard-won effort to keep human society intact, as we learn from the future characters Renee discovers. Earth has suffered, we slowly learn, through a devastating drought caused by a change in the atmosphere that has increased the sun's powerful rays hitting the Earth, and by subsequent devastating wars as the survivors of that Earth-wide drought fought for increasingly scarce resources. The future society, which has been developed as a result of this Earth-wide environmental catastrophe, is firm in its belief that its authoritarian structure and emphasis on the good of the whole, of the interests of the individual, are paramount norms that everyone must follow. And so, when our contemporary protagonist, depicted by the title character Renee, is disrupted from her contemporary American middle-class life and awakens
a la the late 19th century utopian novel Looking Backward, Renee is shocked when she discovers her body has morphed into a pale, emaciated envelope which holds her mind and her emotions. She is awakened far into the future from her traumatic near-death accident. She is, in effect, given a new life, a new opportunity to live. And so our story unfolds with chapters that alternate between the confused but curious thoughts of Renee. It is far into our novel before she truly realizes both her plight and her good fortune. And the very next chapter that showcases the surprises, the delights, and the fears her captors, her saviors, in effect, express to each other as they marvel at the wonder of actually having captured and brought back alive a human creature from the distant past, a feat that was still considered 1,000 years hence to be on the bleeding and not likely to happen edge of scientific research. And so as this page-turner of a novel unfolds, we learn more and more about this future of Earth society, beginning with Renee's captors, her saviors, with their very human desire to learn how to communicate with their new charge at the scientific institute where they work and where Renee is held as a virtual captive. It seems that the far future into which she has been vaulted is populated by people not unlike us in many ways, and yet unlike us in other ways. Yes, that far in the future science research institute that holds our heroine is led by scientists who prize conformity and well-established protocol. Yet they do not cavil when they discover that Renee's very presence threatens to blow that conformity and protocol wide open. Though her captors are sympathetic to her and to the opportunity she offers to learn intimate details about a dimly remembered past on Earth, remember it's been 1,000 years, those same captors are well aware that what they want to learn is threatened by Renee's very existence, as her presence presents their superiors with anything but normal scientific experiments. Our author's ability to take us into the mind of Renee, much less into the minds of those humans far in the future, is surprisingly apt throughout the novel. I followed the story without feeling it was out of line with reality, as best I can determine that reality might be. And as another reviewer noted, quote, "As a reader, I bonded with these people who seemed so much like me, yet so alien," end quote. Now, I noted at the outset that this is a dystopian, maybe at times utopian, but basically dystopian, sci-fi-influenced novel. But please, don't let those descriptors hold you back from reading this thoughtful look at human life and experience. And on the flip side, if you are into dystopian fiction and into science fiction, I know you're going to love this reading experience. Well, let's close without giving away the ending of this exciting read. And some reviewers, and I have to agree with them, I think, suspect that this may be the first in a series of novels, given the way the book ends. Let's end this review with this excerpt from still kind of the middle of our story, as Renee continues to seek to find answers to the questions she has about this new world, about these new people who seem so different from her, and yet in their emotional and even in many of their physical lives, so much like her as well. We join Renee's thoughts. It's Orbit 271. Loya, Kemi, Carr, and Yunjun sat down with me yesterday to explain. We had a long talk. They didn't say it outright, but I could read between the lines. Their bosses are coming to check in on the experiment's results. In other words, they're checking in on me. I got the alarming sense that they don't actually know about my existence. Even a week ago, I could never have discerned that from their voices and expressions. But I've picked up a lot. Even their expressionless faces carry shadows and hints of feeling and tension if you look carefully enough. With a nervous sigh, I propel my legs forward. My quarters are sparse. There's a bathroom in the corner with a toilet-like contraption and a shower that doesn't clean you with water. It uses some substance that sprays on and dries within a minute. It leaves my skin smooth, soft, and fresh. With my index finger applied firmly to the small pad by the door, it slides open. The passageway is empty, which elicits a mild sense of relief. Even a false sense of autonomy is something. No one is actively hovering by my door to see if I made it through another night anymore. I turn left. The second right takes me to the lab. Carr is there, because Carr is always in the lab. I like him. His presence is soothing. He reminds me of some of my mathematician friends who pretended to be antisocial because interpersonal relationships were hard for them. But they weren't. Underneath it, they craved company, like everybody else. They were also, like Carr, completely brilliant. That's from Renee. Jessica Ice, she's a local author, by the way. Makes it all the more fun to read the book. And it's available, this wonder of a book, is available at all of our fine libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.